Good morning. Welcome to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Sunday morning. I'm Captain Mickey Eastman. Producing the Outdoor Show is Jace. Our sponsors today, the Belleville Meat Market, Bayou City Angler, Boyd's One Stop, and Bronze Roofing. All right, it's 80 down on the island this morning. Today we're looking at sunshine and clouds mixed, high around 85. North winds, they're kind of starting out that way this morning, more west, but shifting to southeast 10 to 20 this afternoon with some clouds tonight with a low around 80, south-southeast 5 to 10, and then for tomorrow, high around 85, partly cloudy with east-southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Looking at tides for today, these are Galveston Channel tide predictions. We have two of them. Man, we're sitting on a high right now that occurred at 1:34 a.m. It was a 1.9. Next tide will be a low at 4:42 p.m., a negative 0.1, and 7:04 a.m. at sunrise, 7:25 p.m. sunset, moon phase, 58%. And looking at current conditions right now, it's all down around Galveston. It's west at 5 to 6, Eagle Point, west 5 to 6, Morgan's Point, south-southwest at 2 to 3. And water temps in all these areas anywhere from about 84.5 up to 87 degrees. So there you have it. All right. Well, let's move right along and let's go down to Port O'Connor and let's check in with Captain Kim Golden, see what she's up to this morning. Good morning, Kim. What's happening?
Good morning, Captain Mickey.
Are you doing good?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Me too. It's all good.
Good.
I always sleep good at night when the Astros win.
That's a good thing.
I'm messed up, man. I'm a baseball junkie. I can't help it. Been that way all my life, but not to mention fish junkie too. So, what's up with you? You still catching them?
We are catching some. We are. Yeah. That's a great phrase to sum up this last week. I just knew I was going to come on here and get to tell you, man, what a great,
a big old
great
whopper
biter,
fish
great,
story. Yeah,
I'm telling you, but I don't have it today. So
that's all right. Fishing. It's kind of spotty up here too. Our fishing kind of fell off. I don't know whether it's that summer to fall thing, you know, where we kind of go through that every year. That's probably, if I was a betting man, I'd bet on that.
You can just feel the change about to happen. Feel like you're right on the turn of it out on the bay.
I feel the same.
I think there's good things on the horizon for us, but this last week had us. We had to work for them.
We kind of got spoiled all summer with the bite being fairly good, you know, and a lot of fish to catch. So, but we. Man, when we had millions of them back in the day, I mean, we still went through this in September. And then one day you'll just pop out. I remember I was going through kind of the same thing in September one year, and it was, I'm trying to remember what year that was, 90s or whatever. It was the first year we had teal season back, so I ran a teal hunt that morning, and Blaine did too. We had two blinds booked with the same people all affiliated, and after we get through the teal hunt, we take them to lunch, then pop out on the bay, and we told them it's been slow, you know. It's kind of been a weird bite. Hey, everything came to life. That was probably the biggest school of birds I've ever seen in my life on Trinity Bay. This thing was,
holy cow.
It was one school of fish that stretched all the way from the bayou mouths in the very back of the pocket up there and went down the shoreline about 4 miles. It was a half mile wide. There wasn't even enough seagulls to work all the shrimp jumping out of the water.
Holy cow.
I think we quit counting when we got to 300 fish. You know, we're just catching them and throwing them over our shoulders. It was absolutely stupid. Anywhere from 2-pounders up to 6-pounders. Just as far as you could see, there was trout and shrimp jumping out of the water. And that's when fall kicked in. And that was...
Holy cow.
That was teal season, so it started early that year, but we'd been on about a 2-week stretch where it was desolate. It was a tough bite.
That would have been something to see. I sure would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, that was wild. It kind of reminds you of those redfish videos you see in the surf right now with all the reds all piled up and schooling and going crazy. That's the way it was with trout. Pretty nasty.
Wow. Wow, what an incredible experience. I'm ready for a little of that. I am. We've had our weather this week has been just, we've had a little bit of all of it. When I talked to you last, we were getting ready for the front.
Right.
And I was a little bit, I don't know, maybe looking forward to see what that might bring, if it might bring us something good, being that it was a little early and unusual. I'm here to tell you it did not. It did not. The little punchier, maybe, for us where we were fishing, it was a little punchier than maybe what they forecast. And we went from being able to count the granules of sand on the bottom to fishing in between some substantial windrows. So it changed in a hurry. It surely did. And then after we got through that, it was just very variable. We'd go from no wind to a different direction every time it popped back up. But we are loaded with the bait in this bay system.
Yeah.
We have so much bait. It's just, you can just see the table is set. You can just see it.
Well, they'll need it this winter.
They'll need it this winter. They will. We've had some moments that did shine this week. We would have little runs of getting into some better fish and getting a few caught. And it seems like the smaller profile the lure, the better a job it did. And there were some exceptions. We got into maybe a few feeds that lasted a little bit where they were happy to take whatever you threw at them. But when we got to the grinding parts, those lower profile lures and the occasional early, we lost our topwater bite this last week too. It had been pretty good. I mean, we still got some on it, but it was very scattered.
Yeah.
Very scattered.
Wow.
But all is on the horizon, and this week is done with. So I think we have some good things to look forward to. I'm excited. I think fall's going to be good. We've had a huge flush of water up in here. Our water level's high. We have a lot of water.
Same here.
Same there?
Yeah, we got a good push of water. You know, we got some good bull tides, and we hadn't even got to the equinox tides yet.
I know. And I'm hoping maybe if we all hold our mouths just right, then maybe the surf will give us a few more opportunities before some of our migratory fish move on. We still have some here, still have tarpon here, still have all kinds of fish to play with here in the near shore waters. And so I'm hoping that it'll calm back down and let us get back out there.
Are y'all's redfish real tight to the bank right now?
The ones we've seen have been, because it's mostly waders. We are pretty tight to the bank with all this water. I noticed a lot of poling skiffs, you know, back off in our little creeks and marshes that become accessible when the water gets this high. And I can only guess they found what they were looking for. I feel when that water comes up like this, those fish just keep going back until they get it all taken care of back there. And then it falls down and they come right back out with it. So they're just scattered. I think that's what our fish are right now. They're just very scattered with all of this water. There's some to catch. It's certainly not that we haven't.
Yeah, you just got to grind to get them. It's not like they're balled up real tight.
Yes.
Same way up here. I mean, we've got deep water fish that are just, our deal is we had so much fresh water all spring and early summer, and all these fish were shoved down into the south end of the complex, and now they're moving north, which they naturally do anyway because of, you know, fall and winter coming. That's where they want to be. And the water conditions are good. The salinities are up everywhere, and these fish can go anywhere they want to now. And they're just moving around, getting ready to find a place to winter. And once they get established, that's when we have our field days and good, you know, late fall or early winter fishing. It gets crazy.
I think we do have that to look forward to. I know one day this week we were fishing on the day after a full moon, post frontal, bluebird sky, high pressure. I could go on.
Yeah.
And somebody looked over and said,
there, girl.
We looked over and said, can you imagine why we're grinding? But we even still pulled some out that day. Our star of the show that day was, I was waiting down the edge of a little drop off along some shell, catching a few trout here and there, trying to get super technical with my presentation. And all of a sudden I get one of those kind of thumps and I'm like, well, here we go. And I set the hook and all of a sudden the drag starts coming off and it just doesn't stop. And I get down to the backing twice and I'm thinking probably a jack. That's probably what I figure has come across the deal. It turns out a big bull red right out on the shallow flats. Wow. It was huge. So he definitely made for a fun diversion from our picky trout bite. But he did. It got the feeling like he might have been. It feels like things are starting to come across the flats, preparing to go out to the Gulf. I'm just seeing a rise in the number of things that I start to see about this time of year when that lines up to happen. So whether or not he was moving out from somewhere else or just a little lost, I'm not sure, but he was fun. We sent him on his way.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's probably the most consistent is shallow water fishing right now.
Right now,
They're having a little bit better catches. You know, not to say there's not good boat fishing. It's, I'm just a firm believer, I always have been. You know, you have deep water trout and you got shallow water trout. Some prefer to live deep all year long and some prefer to live shallow all year long.
I believe that too.
And then sometimes you'll get the two that mix together and, you know, the bait hits the shorelines big time and they all end up there. And then they'll kind of set up for the winter close to deep water access, whether it's river mouths, bayou mouths, or, you know, near the ship channel, what have you. That's my theory anyway. I'm sticking to it.
I think I buy it.
I've lived and died by it all my life. Some days chickens, some days feathers.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Well, although we have had a tough week, I think there's a lot of good days on the horizon here. I'm looking forward to it. We're all guessing when we think that first normal front will ease through and give us a little of those conditions. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think we're going to have a better week. I do.
Yeah, we're down almost a half moon now, coming off that full moon. So fishing will continue to get better.
Yes.
Until the next full moon. Looks like we're going to have a pretty good spawn on that next moon too. A lot of our trout are just bloated with eggs right now.
I've heard this talk. That's not something I've seen as much of here, although it very much may be in place. Just because I've seen it doesn't mean it's not so. Mm-hmm. But I have heard that quite a bit from different areas and different folks. So I hope so. That'd be great.
Yep.
That'd be great.
I know fish. Before
more fish. That's right. More fish. I know we had a lot of males piled up in certain areas right ahead of the last full moon. Areas that I know to kind of hold that kind of activity here. So thought it was interesting. We'll see.
Well, cool.
We'll see.
All right. Well, you fishing today or you got a day off?
I am fishing today and I'm looking forward to it. I have two young anglers that are just great skills and lots of fun, very excited. So we're going to go out here and hope these fish act right and see what we can find.
Well, good luck to you. All right.
Thank
Kim.
You.
Well, if somebody wants to reach out to you and come down to POC and get hooked up and booked up, give them some info how they can reach you, Kim.
That'd be great. I'd love it. Reach out. All my information is on my website, and that's at portoconnorfishingtrip.com.
All right. Well, cool. You have a good Sunday, and good luck to you. Catch them up.
Thank you, Kev. Thank you, Captain and Minky. You too. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kim. See you now.
All right.
Later.
Bye-bye.
All right. It's time for a break. You're listening to The Outdoor Show. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. It's 418 here in the Bayou City. All right, we're going to hook up with Captain Jeff Naylor and Paul Massey this morning. Let's strike up a conversation with these fellas. Good morning, guys. What's up?
Good morning. Good morning, Captain Maggie. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing good. Got a good night's sleep. Astros won. Always sleep good after they win, so.
Yeah, man, we're right down the wire.
So, you know, lately I hadn't been sleeping too good to the last couple of nights.
Yeah, Megan. So we were looking at the stats yesterday, and we were at a dead even. Actually, we were in second place, and our wins and losses were exactly the same.
We should have been tied for first with the Mariners.
Well, I guess we are, yes. But, yeah. So that was a straight up tie. We're just below them. They went above us in the standings on the website, or excuse me, I didn't know how that worked, but anyways. Yeah, man. It's again, back here in the backyard, man. And the winds calmed down a little bit, which, didn't start out the weekend that way. So, you folks got out to go fish yesterday, and man, we got Paul on this morning. Paul, you feeling good this morning?
Yes, sir.
Nice.
Well, that's
so
good.
Yeah. We, Tucker, which everybody knows, we got Tucker, a whop, you know, he'll be a year old, as a matter of fact, this coming weekend. So, we took him straight over to Paul when it was about the time to get him, trained up as a bird dog, and he owns Third Coast Kennels over in Wharton, and man, I figured I'd have him on and share some of his knowledge about dogs.
Heck yeah. Well, it's dog and bird season right now. And
it is.
It's that early time of the year where a lot of people's dogs are pretty much out of shape. They've been laid up all summer in the heat, and then they take them out there. Back when I used to hunt a lot, dove and teal and duck and all that, I'd see people. I had the unfortunate times to see a couple of dogs died in the middle of a hunt just because they were just so out of shape. They just worked them to death. It happens.
Yeah, it's not. Them dogs lay up on all year on the couch, and then you pull them out and expect them to work. It's pretty tough on them.
It is, especially in the heat.
Yes, sir. We're doing a lot of tune-ups right now. We do about a 30-day tune-up on them, just get them in shape, make sure everybody's working like they're supposed to. That way, it ain't so hard on them when they got to go do a full day's worth of work.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's critical.
What can you do, Paul, to kind of acclimate them a little bit? I mean, will you start them a couple of months earlier and play with them, I don't know that. And then what do you do when they overheat out in the field? What's a good, strategy to cool them down?
The worst thing you do is put just ice cold water on them. You cool them down too fast, and that'll just cause as big as issue. Best thing is to get them somewhere cool and try to get them as hydrated as quick as you can. Rubbing alcohol on the belly, that'll help dang sure. But if you can kind of look at a dog, and if you look at one's tongue, if that tongue starts laying out and curling back up, and kind of they'll roll out and start looking like a shovel kind of sort of on the end.
Yeah.
And when it rolls up and touches back to their tongue, you need to get that dog cooled down because it's getting too hot.
Doesn't that turn tongue kind of turn blue a little bit too? Lack of oxygen.
Yeah, if it turns blue, you're in a bind. But
we saved one that one time after a teal hunt. A guy, we came in and his dog wouldn't ride in the buggy, so it ran all the way back to the front. So we there, we're cleaning birds, and he puts it in a black Suburban sitting in the hot sun in a kennel in the back of it, all closed up. And I said, man, have you checked on your dog lately? No, I hadn't. He opened those back doors, and it's laid in the kennel, and it's just everything's wet where the dog's been slobbering, and it was in bad shape. We pulled that dog out of there, and, I probably shouldn't have done what I did, but I had some ice in a drink cooler, and I would put a little bit of ice in his mouth, and we got him a bowl of water, and he was too weak to stand up. He was laying there licking that water up in a bowl. Then we just kind of took a rag and dipped it in that slushy ice water, and then would rub his belly down with it. And we brought that dog back, believe it or not. I just knew it was dead. I said, oh, my God.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you gotta dang sure wash them this time of year. It don't take much.
Yeah. Because they don't know when to quit, man. They'll work till they die.
Absolutely, yes, sir. As you for sure need to be doing your part to get that dog in shape, acclimated to the weather before you go to asking him to hunt a whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing a bunch of. I got dogs coming in today for a month-long tune-up before duck season. Just get them in shape, back in the swing of things. And we do quite a few of those this time of year.
Do you?
Yes, sir.
What kind of regiment do you put them on? Just limit their time, you know, just increase it a little more each day, running them or swimming them or what?
Yes, sir. Lots of swimming. That's the best way to get one in shape. And it's easier on the joints. We do a lot of swimming. The biggest thing is dogs that live outside are better acclimated to it. But one that's been laid up on the couch eating potato chips, that's the ones that you
rib
really
eye steaks and potato chips.
That's the ones you got to watch and get in shape and. You know, don't push them too hard, but build them up, build up the stamina, get them in shape. That way they're ready to go for the year.
Right.
That's hilarious.
Hey, there's a lot of dogs these days live better than a lot of people do. I can tell you that.
All of mine do. I can tell you that. They eat better, way better than me, and they have a better routine than I do.
Yeah. You know, Tucker, when we brought Tucker over there, you know, he was fresh. So he was a silver lab, and, you know, we went and we have a couple of other friends and dogs and stuff like that. And, you know, the general consensus was that silver lab is, you know, diluted with another kind of, you know, breed. And that's kind of the thought process. So whether he gained the smarts as a lab or, you know, gained the traits of the other dog or whatever else is in him or something like that, you know, it may not make him the greatest hunting dog, you know. And so when I took him out to Paul's, you know, he basically told me, he said, man, you know, we'll start obedience training and then we'll, you know, kind of move on. If we think that he's, you know, we'll throw bumpers and stuff like that and see how he does, you know, and if he likes it, if he's got the drive, then we'll just keep on going to the next step and on to the next step and the next step. You know, here we are month four, you know, obviously did have a very heavy drive, you know, but one thing that was really shocked by is that you know, through the bumpers doing great, and then you know, we went and actually it was time to throw a live bird. You know, Paul works a lot with live birds, and yeah. Man, he ran over there to it, kind of looked at it, sniffed it, and he said, I ain't touching it, you know.
Rub some honey on it.
Yeah. But we kind of worked through all that, you know, and man, he's, you know, it's quite amazing, you know, what, you know, going from a dog that didn't really know anything, you know, whether he'd work out well to, you know, seemingly shining like a diamond right now. So we'll see how he ends up panning out.
But that's the same thing I'm going to make a dog.
Yeah. It, you know, I'm super excited, to be completely fair with you. I mean, you know, the only thing that does concern me, obviously, is the, I think we're going to try to do an early teal. And, man, you know, this hot weather, I mean, like you guys are alluding to, it's going to be tough on him, man.
Yes, sir.
But,
there's a lot of dogs that they're getting their first real life experience this time of year. And dove hunts are good, but for me personally, if you can get those young dogs on a teal hunt where the birds actually splash and they have a little more to mark off of, and you can take one or two guys and let one or two guys shoot and let that dog learn how to hunt, because these first couple hunts, you're setting them dogs up for the rest of their career. If you do it right, you're golden. If you do it wrong, we won't have issues.
Right.
That's a big thing for me. You gotta start them slow, let them learn how to hunt. Just because them dogs have been with a trainer for 4 months, we're just the practice coach. You're the game coach. If you do your part wrong on the hunting, then we got to go back and fix it.
I always broke my young dogs in with a mature dog, especially teal season.
And I do sometimes, depending on the dog. Like if I have a dog that's got a little less drive, I'll run them with another dog. But you know, even like us as kids, we learn from each other, but sometimes that extra competition made it more of a hassle than what it should be. Cause you
create some bad habits.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep. Especially if that older dog has got some bad habits. And then you're hunting them dogs for the first time, so you want them to get any bird that they have a chance to get. And if you got an older dog that's breaking or whatever, then it can create issues.
Yeah.
If you hunt them slow, let them see birds, let them pick them up, make sure that they're steady and doing everything right, you'll set them up for a good career, hunting career.
I'm with you. All right, well, let me take this quick break, y'all. Hang with me, and I'll come right back to you after this break. Hang with me.
Okay.
All right. Well, the Belleville Meat Market, what a great place to shop for great A cuts of beef, pork, and chicken. And check out their full menu of pecan smoked barbecue. They serve that Monday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., along with bulk pricing that's available on fresh ground beef and all their pecan smoked sausage. And check out all their tailgate party stuff. I mean, it's, you know, hamburger patties, hot dogs, whether they're regular cheddar cheese and tenderloins, the whole nine yards, the Belleville's got you covered. And check out their new Chuck Wagon patties, half-pound beef patties, seasoned and loaded with cheddar cheese. And deer season's right around the corner. Bow season will be here before you know it. No better place anywhere to have your wild game process in the Belleville Meat Market. Check out their venison hot dogs, their deer tamales, their new sausage recipe. They've got so many blends, and they're all excellent. The Belleville's been celebrating over 42 years serving the greater Houston community. That's the Belleville Meat Market, where meat is our middle name. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. All right, it's 4:35. Let's get back to the guys, Paul Massey and Captain Jeff Naylor. All right, guys, we're back.
Back in action. Back
That's
in action.
That's it.
Man, you know, it was crazy. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, interject Tucker into a first hunt. You know, I'm taking advice of Paul. Of course, he owns our part owner, excuse me, in Prairie Bomb Outfitters. They're a Sandhill Crane. I mean, y'all strictly do Sandhill Cranes, right, Paul?
No, we do all waterfowl.
Oh, okay.
Our biggest thing, and I guess what we're more known for, is our crane hunting up there in Amarillo.
Gotcha. But, you know, of course, we're, you know, trying to pick out a good hunt. You know, I say, Paul, you know, what? How about one of those crane hunts, you know? Kind of early.
I wouldn't break her in on one of those right off the bat.
Yeah.
I'd start off with a little duck action, man.
yeah. Something a little smaller,
and,
huh?
As far as us in the guide service, we won't even allow dogs on cranes. To each their own. There's a lot of dogs that pick them up, but that's a bad bird, and there's been horror stories of it.
Better put some safety glasses on them.
we just don't even want to take the chance. Like,
no.
There was a couple years ago, there was a dog up there that crane, when he landed upside down in the pivot tracks, and when that dog kind of slid over the top of him to pick him up like they do, he ran that beak of that crane in his chest, and it killed him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we don't I get it. There's a lot of people that do it. We're not going to take that chance.
Oh, that's fine. Wow. If the bird's dead that they're picking up, but those crippled cranes, they're nasty, man.
Yes, sir. And that bird was, you know, he was well on his way out when that dog got there, and it was just kind of a freak deal. But we're just not going to. You can kill three per person up there, and we're just not. It don't take that long to pick up three cranes.
No, it doesn't. Just walk out there and grab him the neck and carry him back, man.
That's it.
So,
where do you hunt cranes at, Paul? What area are you hunting in?
Amarillo and all around Amarillo.
I got you. So y'all got a lot of good goose action and mallard hunting, all that, huh?
Yes, sir. Well, we hunt the little cacklers quite a bit, the lessers, and Well, there's it depends where you're at in the state of Texas. It depends on what a pond is called.
Yeah.
Below 10, they're ponds. And once you get around 10, they're tanks. And you get up in that part of the world, and they're called playas. But some of them playas can get loaded with ducks and get really, really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we'll hunt cranes. I guess we start October 25th, and we'll hunt cranes till mid-December, and then we'll kind of transition over and do ducks and geese there for a little while.
Right. Well, I've never been able to come up there and hunt that area. I've heard a lot of good things about it. I got some buddies that do every year, and they just love it. It's a lot cleaner hunting than down here on the coast.
I mean to tell you, I hunt quite a bit down here and bogging around in mud and all that whatnot, and you get to go up there and hunt on that dry ground. It's so nice.
Isn't it nice, though? Gosh.
it's way different, for sure.
Yeah.
You've been hunting doves down here the last few weekends, haven't you, Paul?
Yes, sir. Dove hunting has been good.
Yeah.
I've hunted around El Campo on the special white wing last two weekends, and it's been pretty good. Got to get some dogs out, get them going a little early. But you dang sure you got to watch them on this time of year because it's hot.
Yeah, definitely.
Find a shady spot, have water for them at all times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got any masters coming up this year? Or you got any dogs that are gonna try? I guess 2025 is coming to an end pretty quick, but 2026 in the next year, 12 months, anyways.
Yes, sir. We're gonna run a few HRC tests later this fall, October. We got a couple dogs we got to finish up putting titles on, and then I think next spring we'll be going back to and running the grand again. We kind of took off a year. My daughter moved in and I'm homeschooling her, so that kind of put a damper on the traveling, but we got that stuff figured out now, so it's time to get back on the road a little bit.
I gotcha. What does it take on average to get a dog from start to masters, all the way through? If you just stay on it, hot and heavy, relatively anyways,
just as a general timeline, we can build a master hunter in 2 years.
In 2 years.
Yes. And that's that dog. We have that dog pretty much all year. Once we start one like that, we try to hold them. Everybody wants to hunt their dogs. That's the whole reason we got them in the first place. So they get to go hunt a little bit, but as soon as that hunt season is over, they come back in and go back to training.
Sure. Sure. That's interesting. That I'll tell you what, that's a whole nother world, Yeah. But
It is. The hunt test world is fun. We run both organizations, HRC and AKC, and there's a lot of folks that say, I don't need that kind of dog, or I don't need the titles or whatever, but if you look at it from the training and just the dog, if you get a dog to that level, that dog has got way more training than your typical dog, and you're going to have a better dog in the long run.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I talking to Blake, and when he's going through his trials and stuff, that dog really, to be a master, he has to have it. He always told me that, a lot of times they'd be out there throwing ducks and stuff and going through some of the training. And when that dog, she was his last one, basically, when she didn't want to work, it wasn't because she didn't know how to. She just didn't want to. She just stubbornly just said, not today, Dad, So it's one of those things, the dog's really got to have a drive. Well beyond just your normal, hunting type drive. And, you know, so I can imagine, I mean, it, you know, to get a dog to a master's, I mean, you, it's a,
well, I'm sure Paul, being a trainer like he is, I mean, he can work with a dog for a month or so and tell it, hey, this is the one you want to spend time with. I mean, you probably pick them out just like nobody's business, huh?
It don't take very long to notice that, like, right, there's something special about them.
Right.
And one day, like with the hunt test dogs, especially once you get into like your Grand Hunt and Retriever Champions or your Master National Hunters, any of those dogs that got those upward titles, the amount of time that them dogs are on the road, like they're not even at home. They do, you go run the Grand, you're there for 10 days, you pre-Grand train for a week, and then you run 5 days of the hardest hunt test in the country. If that dog has got a Grand Hunting Retriever title, that's a bad, bad son gun.
Yeah.
And to be able to go all over the country, you know, them dogs are living on a trailer. To be able to go all over the country and maintain that caliber and that level, it's pretty amazing to me that they can do it.
Oh, yeah. Mad dog's got to have the one that drives. There's no doubt about it. You know, I mean,
yeah, they'd rather pick up a duck than eat, almost.
Wow. Yeah, that puts things in perspective for sure. Wow, that's incredible. I mean, how many have you gotten so far? You know, to date to that level.
Master hunters, I ain't even real sure on the number of master hunters we got. And I hadn't ran that organization much till the last 2 years. So we got a handful of master hunters. The exact numbers on those, I don't even know. Yeah. I'm going to have to sit down one day and figure out how many dogs we've titled and what.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, that's a good problem to have, I'm sure. It certainly sounds great, I tell you that. So, but yeah, so, you know, and lastly, Paul, I've been, you know, so what would be a good, you know, prep training for, let's just say, you know, you got your family dog, they're about ready to start going out teal hunting. You know, they don't necessarily want to bring them to you, or maybe they do bring them to you for the last little prep training. But if a man's sitting at home, what can he do to kind of help prep that dog for the first teal hunt?
The first and foremost is, you know, get them dogs outside, get them acclimated to the heat, start getting some condition on them, swim them, especially if you got a place where you can swim them. That's safe. Down here in our part of the world, you got to make sure there's no big lizards in water.
Alligators, swim, man.
Swim them dogs a bunch. You know, they're no different than us. If we sit inside all day and then we got to go outside at 2 o'clock in the evening, we don't want to. It's just,
yeah,
we've been in the AC, it's 90 something degrees. We don't want to go out there. And you got to think of them kind of in the same way. You got to get them in shape. That's the biggest thing. Get them in shape, and then you need to make sure them dogs are steadied. There's so many good dogs that accidents happen every year because them dogs don't get worked before season, and then you have a dog break during a teal hunt, and then that's never a good thing. So the biggest thing is to make sure them dogs are steady, in shape. And if you can do 2-3 times a day or a week to help them dogs, you're going to be money ahead. Or if you have to send them to somebody like me that can,
that's right,
you know, put 30 days on them, get them in shape, make sure everything's working the way they are, where they're supposed to, and then you're good to go from there.
Obedience training is a real important part. You get them steady on that, where they mind and listen and. And,
absolutely.
That's the biggest deal. And then the hunting instincts kick in when that training starts.
Absolutely. The obedience is the foundation of the whole dog. If it's got holes
that's
in it,
it.
It's they're going to show up sooner or later.
Yeah, they will.
Dogs are basically nothing more than teenagers with 4 feet and fur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, that's all good
stuff.
What
turns out to be your best trained dogs, male or female? What do you think are the best to work with as far as attention span and all that, you know, obedience, all of it?
Personally, I prefer a female dog.
Me too. I'm 100%
agree. If you can find a female that's got good drive, and us as men, we probably don't like hearing it so much, but those female dogs, they mature faster. They're not worried about all the other stuff that a male dog does. When they hit the ground, they're ready to go to work.
Yeah.
They're not worried about going over here and marking this tree or that tire. When they hit the ground, they're ready to go to work.
Yeah, males are a little territorial, you know.
They are.
Well, I forgot what I was going to ask you now after we talked about the territorial. Oh, I was going to ask you, does spaying or neutering a dog help in any way as far as attitude and drive or anything like that? Does it hurt them or help them or what?
So the old school vets, they used to tell you a male dog 6 months on a female after her first heat cycle. Some of the newer performance type vets that do a lot of performance dogs, they're saying wait till them dogs are 2 years old. It lets them dogs mature, grow up. They get to use everything that they were given as a puppy to mature and fully develop, and then you can do it. And then typically you won't have as much issues. Like if you fix the dog super early, then you have dogs that, like when they get older, they're just kind of soft and maybe a little overweight.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't fix anything myself.
Right.
If that's how they come in this world, I think they ought to keep it.
Yeah, no snipping.
Do you think that makes a difference?
Go ahead.
Do you think that makes a difference in how hard they are to train, or, you know, vice versa or anything, if they are fixed before they come to you, let's say?
No, I've had them come to me fixed before. It doesn't necessarily make them harder, but sometimes it takes a little drive out of them, especially on a male dog. I think they need all that testosterone they have when they start being a teenager.
Oh, yeah, male needs his ammunition, man. You got to, yeah. That's.
But typically, from what I've seen, if you fix them early, you take a little spark out of them. But I just did some tune-ups on two dogs for a guy here in El Campo that owns Full Auto Firearms, and both of them dogs are fixed, and they're bad, bad little females, and they got just as much go before, you know, now than they did before they got fixed.
Yeah.
So sure. It varies every dog, but typically my stuff I don't ever fix.
If Do you I think one, fixing eat, a female, you know, having her spayed early, does that increase their lifespan? I've heard it does, but I'm not real sure. I'm on the fence about that.
I've heard the same thing. Supposedly, if you fix them, you lessen the chances of cancer and on all the reproductive side. But
see, I did that with my last two yellow females I've had. One I fixed, and then she ended up getting squamous cell carcinoma when she was right in her prime. Awesome hunting dog, 5 years old. She made it to her sixth birthday, and I had to put her down. It got so bad. And then my next one, I spayed it, and it made it almost 14 years.
Yes, sir.
With no issues. So, hey, toss a coin, I guess, huh?
pretty much.
Yeah.
I think if you're not set up to deal with a heat cycle on a female, it's a good thing to do. If you can, if you're set up where you can manage a heat cycle, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of old school in my thinking. If that's what they come in the world with, that's what they sure. ought to go out with.
Right.
But sure. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting.
All very interesting, man. Paul, man, appreciate all the good insight. You know, just so I don't get off without giving a report, you know, for this
We got a couple of minutes. Tell me what's going on in Freeport.
Yeah, man. This is the last day of last weekend of snapper season.
Yes,
they kind of went out with a bang. Few people got out yesterday. And, man, you know, the fish are just coming back. You know, our boat was out yesterday. They came back with some studs. I mean, some real studs. So, the size stays steady all year long right to the end. You know, so I guess what I said came to fruition. But, anyways, the kingfish never did come alive. Amberjack season is still in full swing, and we're still catching some blackfin at the shrimp boats when they're out there. So the shrimp boats are starting to come in and out a lot right now, too. So, you know, the fleet's not quite as thick as they were a couple months ago, but there's still plenty of fish around them and underneath them. You know, the one tip I could give everybody right now is, you know, again, what I alluded to at the beginning of the year, all the rocks were pretty much clean, looked like they were gone. All the fish had been caught, moved away, went north, 288 north, but actually they didn't. So they're starting to come back. So a lot of those rocks that you went to in the 160-foot range or whatever, I'd highly suggest you go check them again because they're probably full of fish. So, yeah, man, I think the fishing, my prediction is the fishing will probably get better a little bit here for this end of September, end of October season, as long as we can stay away from some hurricanes and knock on wood and, you know, everything kind of remains how it is. I think fishing is going to get real good. Let's just pray for good weather. So.
You got it. All right. Well, Paul, if somebody wants to get with you on a tune-up or some training or even a hunt up in Amarillo area, give them some info how they can reach you, bud.
All right. For the dog training, you can look us up on Facebook at Third Coast Retrievers, or you can call my cell phone, 979-216-8549. For the hunting in Amarillo, you can go to our website, prairiebomboutfitters.com, and you'll be able to check out all the info, book a hunt, everything right off that website.
Cool. All right. And Jeff, give some info. Somebody wants to reach out to you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Call me anytime at 979-417-1013. Y'all know my website, STSL Adventures. And, man, we look forward to talking next week. And
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for all the good advice and info on everything. And nice talking to you, buddy. And, Jeff, as always, I appreciate you, man.
You got it, brother.
Y'all have a good Sunday.
Yeah, all right.
Bye. Later, guys. Thanks. All right. All right, we're going to take our top of the hour break. We'll be right back after these messages.